This is a public service announcement brought to you, in part, by liquor. This podcast is produced by belligerent, drunken pricks. As a result, there may or may not be spoilers contained within. We will try, dear listener, to warn you that a spoiler is incoming, though we cannot promise. We're drunk, goddammit, so consider this your first and final warning. Furthermore, we would like to take the time to point out there will be a fair fucking amount of coarse fucking language.
My beard, it's quite impressive. It's sending you a message. I'm gonna make your hairy dreams come true. My beard, you know you want it. Now, baby, it's time to get on it. Girl, don't be afraid, cause I am bringing my beard to you.
G'day and welcome to the Drunken Beardsman Podcast. I'm your host, Drunken Dan, and joining me as always, it's fucking nobody. That's right, it's going to be a solo episode this week. JD's feeling a little bit under the weather, and I didn't really want to leave it another week without putting anything out, so it's just going to be you and me, dear listener. Just going to be you and me. So, in that effort, I'm going to stay away from the news this week. We'll have a bit of a catch-up on next week's episode, and we'll do the booze reviews next week as well. So, going to be a real, real quick, short, and simple episode this week. Was International Vodka Day, so we did have a vodka shootout lined up, but oh well. So this week, seeing as I'm all by myself, I thought I'd do something I very rarely get a chance to do much of anymore, and that's talk about some of the books I've been reading. There's been a couple that I've read over the last sort of 2-3 weeks that I thought worth a bit of a mention. I'm going to start off with Proof, The Science of Booze, written by Adam Rogers. Now, Adam Rogers is a writer for the science magazine Wired. And it also turns out he's a bit of a single malt whiskey aficionado, I suppose you'd call it. So, Proof, The Science of Booze is his journey as he delves into the wonderful world of the science of alcohol and how it's created. From yeast and sugar to the hangover. Now, like I said, he's a bit of an avid scotch drinker, and the base of the book is both a combination of obsessive thirst for knowledge and a particular bacteria that's older than humanity but seems only to exist in an environment that involves a distillation process. Now, look, there is a huge amount of fucking science in this book, which is really no surprise considering it's called The Science of Booze. But, you know, in keeping with someone who actually writes for a science magazine, a popular science magazine at that, it is communicated in a very, very fucking easy way that I found quite easy to fucking read. So while he does go on about polymers and bacteria and this and that and everything else that's there, it's not bogged down to the point where you need a fucking PhD to understand what he's actually saying. And just going through the whole process of how alcohol is made and a little bit of the history on some of your bigger brands out there and just the history of alcohol itself is fucking interesting as shit. It is absolutely jam-packed with little factoids and trivia, and it is written in a very nice way. So the way he set this out is there's about 7 chapters, I think. And the first 2 chapters, you know, are yeast and sugar, which he credits as being the most important aspect of creating booze, which, to be fair, they are. And then it goes through every step of the distillation process, how ethanol, which is what gets you fucked up in booze, how that actually fucking affects your body and what it does to you, and then the hangover and you know, his journey into how to try and fucking kill or cure the hangover pretty damn quick. So, look, I can't recommend this book enough if you do like to read and you are interested in your fucking booze, which if you're listening to a podcast like this, you probably will. I can't recommend it enough. You've got to go out there. You've got to read this book. It was fucking fantastic. It's not overly fucking huge, but it's not overly small either. It's a nice, decent-sized fucking book. I mean, you can pick it up just about anywhere, I suppose. All in all, I'm going to give this fucking book by Adam Rogers, Proof, The Science of Booze, motherfucking A. And fuck it, while we're on the non-fiction side of things, you may have heard a few months back that Seth Rogen and his writing partner were trying to get a movie called Console Wars made, based on the book Console Wars, Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle That Defined a Generation, written by Blake J. Harris. Now, if I could finally got my ass around to reading this book when I had a nice quiet week there, just a week or two back. And once again, really interesting book. Now, it was no real surprise I was going to like this book because I don't mind my non-fiction and I am a fucking bit of a nerd. So, it basically chronicles the battle between Sega of America and Nintendo of America during the late 80s, early 90s for supremacy of the 8-bit, 16-bit video game market in America after the meltdown in 1983. Now, if you don't know what the video game crash 1983 is, to try and sum it up real quick, basically with the popularity of the Atari 2600 and just the explosion of video games during the late 70s, early 80s, it hit a point where fucking every man and his dog was making video games, and every man and his dog was making making consoles. Even like Mattel even had a console there for a while, for fuck's sake. And this, you know, the quality of everything just wasn't that good, and consumers just turned away from droves. This sort of culminated with the release of the ET game on Atari, which is still considered one of the very worst games of all fucking time. Ended up with a fair fucking hunk of them being buried in a landfill down in New Mexico. So, you know, it took a few years for Nintendo to decide that it could, you know, really sort of fucking try its hand in America again. And that's sort of what this is all about. You know, the Famicom or the Nintendo Entertainment System console, depending on which part of the fucking world you're in. And Sega's attempt to try and crack that market. Now, it is told more from the perspective of the Sega side, which was at the time led by Tom Kalinske, mainly because I think Blake J. Harris is a bit of a Sega man. He sort of states that in his blurb. And Tom Kalinske was quite generous with his time in giving. And Sega of America team at the time were also a lot more fucking generous with giving interviews and what have you. So, they've just got a more interesting story. I mean, they started off with a 5% market share, and it sort of, they raised over 55%, and then with the release of the Saturn, sort of sunk back again. So, it does go into a bit of the intrigue and a bit of the shenanigans that were going on between Sega of America and Sega of Japan at the time. There was a fuck ton of friction there, and just the different styles that Nintendo and Sega in general sort of took in their advertising and in their marketing and in their style of games and quality and all that sort of order shit. Look, this book is told, like, it is basically a non-fiction narrative, but by what I mean by that is that it is based completely off interviews and letters and correspondence and shit like that, but Blake J. Harris has written it in a way that it reads very, very fucking nicely as a narrative sort of fucking version. And it is absolutely brilliant to fucking read. It is so easy to read. It is incredibly interesting. And it's funny, actually. Not only did he write the book, but at the same time, he was developing a documentary, and Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who produced that, also wrote a blurb in the front of the book, as well as trying their damn hardest to get this made into an actual fucking, you know, Hollywood fucking movie, which would be just wonderful. I mean, it lends itself so well. I mean, the documentary is fucking a foregone conclusion, of course, but an actual fucking movie, this lends itself to so well, and I put that down to the way Blake J. Harris writes this fucking very interesting fucking story. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is an absolutely brilliant fucking book, and you learn some shit. And I admit, I'm a Sega man myself. I never had a Nintendo. I still don't have a Nintendo. Never have, never probably will. Not now, anyway. So, you know, it was interesting to see how this Sega that I used to sit in the story, that used to sit underneath my big old boxy TV with the RF fucking switch around the back, and how it sort of rose up through the ranks from this, you know, little fucking miserly pretender to Nintendo's throne to damn near toppling it at one point. And it was sort of shocking to see just how close it came at one stage to really sort of doing some hardcore damage to fucking Nintendo back in the day. So, And it sort of, the book sort of culminates right about when the Sega Saturn came out, and also with the release of the Sony PlayStation. And I tell you what, there's some fucking shenanigans that went on behind the scenes between Sony and Nintendo and Sega of America. I tell you that right now. So if you are into video games, it is another one I highly recommend you go out there and fucking look at, because it is just fucking awesome. Once again, another fucking A book from me. Now, this book crept up on me, and I had no idea it had even been released. I'd been fucking watching and watching and watching, and then, I don't know what happened, people. I fucking fell asleep. So, released on September 2nd, as a prequel to the new Star Wars Rebels fucking series that's due to come out, I think sometime next month, it is, of course, Star Wars A New Dawn, written by John Jackson Miller. Now, this book is very, very, very exciting fucking book to be reading, ladies and gentlemen, because it is the first confirmed canon book to be coming out since Disney took over the Star Wars fucking franchise, or took over fucking Lucasfilm. Now, the reason why it's the first canon, because I can hear you saying, but what do you mean, Uncle Dan? There are fucking hundreds of the bastard of fucking books out there have been written since, you know, the late 80s, and you're right, there is. But all that old canon is now up in the air. They've come out and stated that it doesn't really count anymore. So these books that are coming out are the ones that really, truly fucking count. So, like I said, this one is a prequel to Rebels. It's six years before the show starts. It's set 8 years after Episode 3 and 11 years before Episode 4. So we're really sort of, you know, Rebels itself, if you've been living under a rock, is sort of based around Jedi in hiding called Kanan, and you know, it's sort of chronicling the start, at least from what I get, the start of the rebellion. So it's written by John Jackson Miller, who has written a shitload of the Knights of the Old Republic books, which are a really good read if you haven't read them before. He also wrote the Lost Tribe of the Sith stories, which are fucking really good. Like, they're mainly short stories. Well, I think they're all short stories. I think there's about 11 or 12 of them. But they're really good. Like, this dude can write. He knows his shit, and he knows the fucking universe that he's playing around with. So this one here focuses on the story of Hera and Kanan, who seem to be the two main characters, or two of the main characters of the series of the Rebels. You know, Kanan's like this Jedi in training at the time of Order 66. He's had to go into fucking hiding, and, you know, he's being characterized during the spots, and you really get it from this book that he's basically Han Solo with a fucking lightsaber, which isn't that far off the mark, you know what I mean? He's doing his best to sort of stay the fuck out of trouble and stay the fuck out of the way. You know, he doesn't want to attract too much attention to himself. He likes to put out that he doesn't really give a fuck about too much or nobody, which is, you know, basically a load of shit deep down underneath. If he can push past himself, he's actually quite a fucking caring, compassionate character. And Hera is the Twi'lek that you may have seen in the various spots now. She's the pilot, she owns the ship, and she's doing her best to try and gather information and start a subversive action against this newly formed empire. So, on to the book itself. Look, it is slightly fucking kiddie in the way that it's told and the way that it's written, although the thing I found rather disturbing with that in mind is there is a fair amount of sexual tension that is pretty damn palpable between Kanan and Hera. You can sort of tell that it's, you know, slightly Disney-fied, but I mean, the good part of that is I could probably sit down and read this with my, you know, my 8 and my 9-year-old, you know what I mean? I could really, it's one of those books you really sit down and read. And the thing I liked about this book is it really fleshed out the dynamic that I hope to God we're going to see between these two characters, and just the characters themselves. You don't get a whole lot of backstory into their history and shit, but, you know, it really fleshes out their character and fills out their character, and I cannot wait till Rebel starts, and I can start to really sort of start picking out all the little nods and hints. And on the note of nods and hints and allusions, there is a metric shit ton to both the original trilogy and, you know, the prequels to a lesser extent, and just generally what's going on in the world. And it's a beautiful fucking filler between, you know, episodes 3 and 4. So, like I said, It is a really good book. It does take a while to build up to the action, you know. There is a little bit of political fucking bullshit that sort of, you know, that carries over from episode one, The Phantom Menace, which I wasn't particularly impressed with. But, I mean, I don't mind a bit of build-up, and if you can stick through it, people, it does pay off. The fucking action and the way it ends is just fucking phenomenal. It is absolutely amazing, and I loved this fucking book. And I cannot wait to see what James Luceno does with Tarkin, which is the next book that comes out in November, I'm pretty sure. So, I'm going to give this book, all in all, a B+. It does lose a bit of a point, simply because of Disneyfication, but I mean, it is Star Wars, and like I said, I'm looking forward to reading it with my kids. So, that was Star Wars A New Dawn. And finally, the last book I'm going to talk about this week is a book called The Broken Eye, written by Brent Weeks. Now, The Broken Eye is actually the third part in a series of four books written by Brent Weeks, and it's part of the Lightbringer series that he's been writing for the past couple of years. Now, Brent Weeks is an amazing fucking writer. This is actually the second series that he's written, and it is the second series that I've absolutely been in love with. Now, the story's main center is based around a 16-year-old orphan by the name of Kip Gile, who's a poor boy who discovers he is, in fact, the bastard son of the Sorcerer Supreme, messiah-like figure of the setting. So, this is a pre-industrial world where people can draw magic from light. More specifically, a certain spectrum of white light, which each have different properties as well as different emotional characteristics. Now, there is a built-in safeguard with this amazing ability. There is a finite amount of luxon that one can, which is what they call the magic, that one can draw before becoming poisoned by it. Now, this is indicated by a halo of color around the eye that will eventually burst. You know, the more you use, the bigger this halo gets until it, you know, hits this supercritical mass and just shatters, signifying that that person has become oversaturated with the effects of the luxon, because this magic or this luxon, this color, they don't only have physical repercussions in the world, they also happen to have, you know, deeply psychological effects on a person. So, for example, blue, for instance, will make you hyperlogical, and you know, the magic itself, the physical property, is it's a very hard, stiff fucking type material that you can use to make weapons and what have you with. And green, for instance, is a very pliable fucking magic that you can cast, but it also comes coupled with an extreme wildness. So the problem there is that once that halo, you know, bursts, so to speak, they start to thinking maybe they can turn their whole bodies into Lux, you know what I mean? They start finding the advantages to having, you know, for instance, if you're a blue and you become a blue white, you start turning your body into an armor of blue Lux, and it's all perfectly logical because, you know, you fucking justify it to yourself. Now, most people can only draw one color, with a few people, you know, with less people being able to draw more and more color as it goes on. So you can have bichromats and trichromats and what have you. Now, there's only supposed to be one person who can draw upon every color once a generation, and that person becomes the Prism. Now, the Prism is, as you would tell from the name, a perfect light splitter. They can use every single color in the spectrum, including what they call subred and superviolet, which is, of course, infrared and ultraviolet. And they also have the added bonus of being able to draw as much of this luxon as they want without any ill effects. So they don't become whites, they don't become light sick, or anything like that. It seems to be like some sort of divine check and balance, you know, which makes sense, because they're also the central figure of the religion based around, you know, their light giver god, so to speak. So these prisms only generally last in multiples of seven, so 7 years, 14 years, 21 years, and we find out later in the series that there is an actual reason for that. It's not just divine intervention, there's a full-on less mystical fucking reason as to why that is. So this series is set, you know, 16 years after a civil war almost tore the world apart after there was apparently two prisms that came in the one generation, you know, done by these two brothers. So we find out through the start of the series that young Kip is in fact the bastard son of one of these. Now, after his mother's died, he gets given this fancy knife and a letter saying he's, you know, got to go kill his father. So I'm not going to give you the whole rundown on all three books thus far, because we would be here for the next 3.5 fucking hours, because I love this series that much. I feel bad just giving it that quick little overrun. So, look, the things I love about this book is Brent Weeks knows how to write action. Action is something that's pretty hard to write without, you know, writing pages and pages and pages of highly descriptive fucking bullshit. It's really hard. I've only really found a couple of authors that can do it quite well. You know, R.A. Salvatore is one of them, and Brent Weeks is the other. And he writes in a way, even though, like, this is supposed to be a pre-industrial world, you know, they use a lot of, I wouldn't say archaic speech, but it's certainly not, you know, modern vernacular. He throws in enough of, you know, modern speech patterns and modern words that it becomes really easy to read, and it becomes quite fucking funny in times. So, this series in particular, there's a lot of, you know, political machinations and intrigue and fucking mystery and all that sort of shit, which I really enjoy. He is a man who can keep you hooked from page to page to page to page to page. Now, this book is big. It's the biggest book I think he's written. Comes in at almost, I think it's 1,800 pages. I know it was big because it actually took me about 4 or 5 days to read. Normally, I can pump out a book in about 2 days, 2-3 days, and that's with work. But it kept me hooked the whole fucking time. Like, I was not sleeping because I just wanted to know how it fucking ended. And he can write a cliffhanger that you almost want to scream and throw the book, but you don't. He gives you just enough to keep you going until he puts out the next one. I hope George R.R. Martin takes some fucking notes, but leaves you fucking definitely fucking craving and waiting for the next book. Now, the thing I like about this book in particular, or like about this series in particular, is he's turned, you know, your typical sort of fucking, your typical sort of hero on his fucking head. You know what I mean? The hero of these books and the people in power in this book in particular, they're not, you know, your typical fucking blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white fucking fit friggin' supreme fucking warrior types that you normally get in a lot of fantasy novels. No. Kip Gyle is, in fact, a slightly tubby, overweight kid who, over the course of the series, you know, gets fitter and you know, especially because he starts to train as an elite military unit, you know, but he's still, you know, a tubby sort of fucking little guy. And the thing that the most valued drafters in this world are black. The logic being is, as they pull in, you know, the Lux and all the magic, they pack the magic, literally pack it in their bodies, on their skin, so you can see if they're holding the magic, which, you know, is a bad thing if you're trying to fucking hide the fact. So the best, you know, the best drafters in this sort of setting have got black skin and they've got blue eyes, preferably, you know, blue eyes being the ones that have been able to, you know, absorb and draw in the most light. So the fact that he's twisted that sort of convention in fantasy, especially, on its fucking head and giving us, you know, not your normal sort of fucking hero of the story, or indeed heroes of the story, you know, it's not, and the ruling class and all that sort of shit, I found really fucking quite good and quite fucking interesting. I loved it. I absolutely fucking loved it. I love the way he writes his action. I love the way he manages to weave in enough fucking intrigue and mystery and you know, political fucking maneuvering without it being a huge part of the book. And even when he does, you know, go out of his way to make it quite fucking, you know, he has to explain a fair bit of, you know, a fair bit of the intrigue, he doesn't do it in a way that just has you skipping the pages forward. You know what I mean? You're not sort of skimming extra quick. You're actually paying fucking attention. And he knows how to build lore. I've noticed, like I said, this is his second series he's written. I've noticed it in both fucking series. This man knows how to build his world up. The world building that goes into these stories is phenomenal. Absolutely fucking phenomenal. He has got his world's fully fleshed out before he picks up a pen. I swear to God, the man is just a fucking genius. Absolute genius. He is a fucking, I think just about every book he's written has turned up on the New York Bestseller Times list, but he just doesn't seem to have the exposure that this man truly fucking does deserve. And I tell you what, this would make a great fucking TV series or movie series, you know. It would be fucking absolutely phenomenal to see on the screen. And he writes in a way that is really, you know, it really lends itself for a screen adaptation, and I would love to see it written on the fucking screen. The only weak thing about this book is the fact that I've now got to wait however the fuck long for another one. Because I'd completely forgotten that this is, you know, only the third out of four parts. I was quite pissed. But, you know, fucking, that's the only thing I can find wrong with this book. I'm a happy, happy man. So, all in all, I give this book, The Broken Eye by Brent Weeks, an A fucking plus. I really could not be happier at all with this fucking book, with the author at all. So, look, they're the books I wanted to talk about. Like I said, it's only going to be a very, very, very quick show this week, mainly because, you know, Jay's sick, and one person sitting here talking shit by himself just ain't that fucking interesting. But I didn't want to leave it just another book, another week after we've had a week off just recently. But nothing out there, and I wanted to get these books out. So that was my book nerd episode for this week. Next week we should be back up to speed. JD should be over his fucking sickness. And we've got a lot, lots and lots to talk about. We might still do the booze shootout. I'm not quite certain. It's a bit late, but we have got him sitting there, so why the fuck not? And it's been a while since we've talked about some Star Wars, so I think we might get in and have a bit of a Star Wars update. There has been some shit that's come out just recently. So, thanks for bearing with me today, and make sure you go and find us. You can find us a number of different ways. You can, of course, find us on Twitter, at DrunkBeersman. On the Twitter, you can find us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/TheDrunkenBeersman. We've got a website. Did you know we've got a website out there? It's www.TheDrunkenBeersman.com. That's where you'll find our reviews, some articles that we write from time to time. And you can also drop us a line. Drop us an email at mailbag@thedrunkenbeardsman.com. So, thanks once again for joining us this week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Drunkle Dan, and I will see you next week on the same drunk channel at the same bearded time. Just close your eyes and touch me in the beard.
Up close, it won't bite. You and my beard are gonna have a really nice time.
My beard,
it's waiting for you, and girl, you know I want you to. So put your hand up in my beard and see what you can find.
You don't have to be scared,
just touch it, baby, yeah.
I've got facial hair,
just put your hand right there.
There's magic in the air.
Ooh, darling, yeah, you really want to clutch it
for reasons you can't understand. Wanted so much, so baby, just retouch your hand.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of R vs. R Media. Theme song is Touch Me in the Beard and is provided with much gratitude by The Beards. Find more of their stuff at www.thebeards.com.au. Remember to go ahead and check out the website at www.thedrunkenbeersman.com, where you'll find all our booze reviews, rants, and previous episodes of the podcast.
Tingles up and down your spine. Tears well up, emotions flow. Don't be scared, just let it all go. This is the moment dreams come true. So do I want to do?